You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by the International Association of Firefighters, Local 42, and IBEW, that's International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 124. Greater Kansas City Firefighters, Local 42, is an affiliate of the International Association of Firefighters. We are your firefighters, EMS professionals, communication specialists, prevention and logistical support members within the Greater Kansas City metro region. We support labor and labor education that is provided by this program. And the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers supports the Heartland Labor Forum. We have been wiring Kansas City since 1905. And if you're not finding your electrical contractor at IBEWLocal124.org, then you're not getting the best value for your money. The Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, there's a hot race for state senate in the Northland. It's Lauren Arthur versus Kevin Corlew, and they'll be with us tonight on the show. Also, in Raytown, there's a TIF over TIF. That's the Walmart TIF, and the number of police calls to the store causing the city to raise taxes to cover the cost. Who should pay? In the news, AT&T bragged about how it would create jobs with its lavish tax cut, but those jobs aren't in the U.S. And more bank deregulation will put pensions at risk. Our feature at the end of the show is Washington Window on Workers with Mark Grunberg. We'll talk about the Trump administration's attack on the rights of federal workers. And now for the news.
And this is the news from our side for May 31st, 2018. Iconic U.S. telecom giant AT&T received an unprecedented windfall from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which President Trump signed into law in December 2017. But despite this massive boost to its profits, the company is choosing to undercut and offshore American jobs. AT&T lobbied aggressively in favor of the tax cuts, and CEO Randall Stephenson went on the record with promises to create thousands of jobs should the bill pass. He said, "By immediately lowering the corporate tax rate to 20%, this bill will stimulate investment, job creation, and economic growth in the United States. If the House bill is signed into law, we'd commit to increasing our domestic investment by $1 billion in the first year in which the new rates are in place. And research tells us that every $1 billion in capital invested in telecom creates about 7,000 good jobs for the middle class." The AT&T Workers Union, CWA, however, says that in stark contradiction to these grand statements, AT&T continues to eliminate thousands of good family-supporting jobs from coast to coast and has cut more than 16,000 call center jobs in the past 7 years alone. Instead of investing in its workforce and transitioning to jobs of the future, AT&T is laying off American workers and relying increasingly on a global web of low-wage contractors to provide customer service and network maintenance. AT&T reaped billions due to the recent tax cuts and has robust profits. AT&T saw profits of $29.5 billion in 2017 compared to $13 billion the previous year. This massive increase reflects a $20 billion boost from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in the form of a reduction of future tax liabilities on AT&T's balance sheet. Thanks to the tax cuts, the company also expects a $3 billion annual increase in cash profits starting in 2018.
Longtime labor leader Bill Richardson died on May 4th at age 87. Bill started his career as a painter and soon became an elected union official. He followed that career to Washington, D.C. as an assistant to the president of the International Painters Union in 1970. Then in 1973, he came home to Kansas City and was elected to head the Greater Kansas City Building and Construction Trades Council in 1974. He served there until 1991. Bill's obituary, probably written by his longtime partner, Jane Van Zandt, says, "Bill's passion for the rights and well-being of working men and women led him to revive Labor's Educational and Political Club Independent and the 40 Club, a monthly luncheon for labor representatives. In 1974, he organized an annual dinner to recognize labor heroes. After his retirement from LEPCI, Bill was recognized as one of those labor heroes with a Union Solidarity Award. There will be a celebration of Bill's life on July 10.
This from PAI, the Labor News Service. Yielding to big pushes by the big banks and the deregulation mania of the GOP Trump administration, the Federal Reserve Board voted on May 30th to let the financiers, in so many words, speculate in derivatives and other shady financial instruments with mom and pop's pension money and your paychecks. And that virtual repeal of the so-called Volcker Rule, a curb Congress enacted in the Great Recession Dodd-Frank law in 2010, led top consumer and union leaders to hit the ceiling. National Consumers League Executive Director Sally Greenberg said, "Repealing the Volcker Rule is risky public policy, bad for the economy, and puts everyone at risk because banks will surely gamble with other people's money, just as they have throughout history when rules are relaxed. Banks also complain the Volcker Rule is burdensome. Well, profits have been soaring. The FDIC reported last week that U.S. banks had a record $56 billion in profits in the first quarter of the year. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka tweeted, "The Volcker Rule prevents Wall Street banks from gambling with taxpayer-backed money. Gutting it would be a huge gift to the big banks, their well-paid lobbyists, and substantially increase the risk that working people will have to bail out the banks again."
Among the anti-labor bills delivered to whichever governor of Missouri will sign them is a draconian one aimed at busting Missouri's already weak public sector unions. HB 1413 passed the Senate in the final days of the session. Under the measure, government employees other than first responders and law enforcement officers would have to opt in to have unions withdraw dues from their paychecks. What that means is that every year, unions would have to get members to reauthorize dues deduction, a time-consuming and rather useless task, since members are free to cancel membership whenever they want. Even worse, the bill puts scary obligations on union officers for reporting every year on any compensation they get from the union, even reimbursements, under penalty of prison. And it makes it significantly harder for public sector workers to organize a union. Representative Scott Sifton said, "This will result in weaker collective bargaining for what are already the lowest paid state employees." But the bill's co-sponsor, Senator Bob Onder, argued that members should have more say over what their dues are spent on. "We guess it isn't enough that membership is voluntary and that unions are democratic organizations with elections more frequent than Onder's for the state Senate." Onder continued, "I really view this bill as being about accountability and transparency." One wonders why he doesn't take his own advice and support more transparency for the legislature. That's the news from our side. The news was read by Jen Zaman, Greg Swartz, Pat Reilly, and I'm Judy Ansel.
Welcome tonight. We have Lauren Arthur in our studio. She is one of the candidates for the election, the special election on June 5th in Clay County. And we are waiting for our other candidate to show up. He had been confirmed by his people, and that would be Kevin Corlew. We are fortunate to have two wonderful legislative people in our area, and I do hope he's able to show up. Lauren, welcome.
Thanks so much for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
I am so happy that you took time out of your busy schedule. This last week, just before the election, I thought, oh, this is asking a lot of anybody.
No, well, I apologize if I smell a little bit. We've been out knocking doors in this hot weather, but it's important we're pounding the pavement and showing up on people's doorsteps.
Oh, that's wonderful. Have you had good reception?
Yeah, it's been overwhelmingly positive. You know, I think people are frustrated by what they've seen in Jefferson City, a lot of the dysfunction and the chaos and corruption. And as someone who grew up in the area, I'm very sensitive to the community's needs. I think they appreciate that. They appreciate me showing up, and they appreciate that I have a different vision for how to make a better Clay County.
Where did you go to school? You say you grew up over there.
Yeah, so I am a proud graduate of our North Kansas City School District. I attended Briarcliff Elementary and Northgate Middle School, and I'm a very proud North Kansas City High School alum.
Wonderful. I know that they are all proud of you as well. And so you have been in Jefferson City now for 4 years.
Yes, so I am finishing my second term. I got elected after a contested primary and general election in 2014 and then was reelected in 2016. And I never imagined that I would run for office. But sometimes when you don't like your choices, you have to be the choice. And I saw you know, before I ever ran for office, I taught, and I saw that my students really needed an advocate in Jefferson City, and that that was an important place where important decisions were made, and I wanted to be a part of that conversation and advocate for the kids I love and the people back home that I love.
Well, and that says a lot for you to be able to decide to take that on.
Yeah, I ask myself every day, why did I get into this?
Well, but I think you probably had some good mentors.
I did.
That helped you with that. It was kind of a surprise to have this election come up like it did.
Right. So Senator Ryan Silvey, who was an outspoken critic of now almost former Governor Eric Reitens, he got appointed to something called the Public Services Commission, which deals with utilities regulation. And he got appointed to that commission. It left the seat vacant. Eric Reitens, it was up to his discretion to determine when that election would be called. He could have put it in August. He could have put it in November, would have saved the taxpayers some money, but instead decided to make it its own special election June 5th. So it's the only thing on the ballot.
Well, that means it's a really quick run-in and vote. It won't take much of your day.
Right. Yeah, they're expecting a pretty low turnout, unfortunately. Somewhere 10 to 12%, I think, is what they were estimating. But this is a high-stakes election, and we're hoping that people make their voices heard and show up on June 5th.
What is at stake?
A lot. You know, right now in Jefferson City, there is a major imbalance I am one of 47 Democrats in a House of 163 members. I would be one of 10 Democratic senators in a body of 34 senators. And I think instead of really well-vetted, carefully thought-through legislation, sometimes the majority party just passes more extreme legislation. You know, we as Democrats can't force people to the table to negotiate. They don't really need our votes. And now we don't have the governor's veto. So it's probably not the way our founding fathers intended government to work. And I think wherever we can come together, find a moderate common sense solution, we should. And instead, it's been more extreme and one-sided than ever before, really.
What you mentioned school before and books, and so we have, I see probably three main areas where our state needs help. Mm-hmm. And one of them has to do with the public education. Seems like that comes up all the time, the budget for that.
Sure.
And it also has to do with, we also have to do with medical coverage, Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
and a concern too about the funding for the rural hospitals, of which two have closed in the last about 3 years. Would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would say funding for our schools is our top priority, and not just funding something called an education formula, but making sure that we're really investing in education in a serious way. I know other states, we're somewhere in the 30s or the 40s in terms of state funding per pupil. So we could be investing more in students, and, you know, they fully fund something called the education formula, but we're funding other areas of education at a pretty unacceptable rate. So school transportation, for example, is funded at 20%. And I've said this before, but we have districts across the state, rural districts, that can't afford to bus their kids to school on Fridays. And the idea that kids would have to miss out on a day of school because their districts can't afford to send them, I think is not just problematic for the individual student, but it's really a problem for our state and if we are depending on an educated workforce. And in terms of healthcare, I'm proud to sit as a ranking member on the Health and Mental Health Committee, and wherever we can expand access to healthcare, we should. Obviously, affordability is another major issue. When it comes to access to healthcare, a lot of people have to drive really long distances to get to a hospital. And like you said, some rural hospitals are now closing because they can't afford to keep their doors open. And I see Medicaid expansion as a really important tool in expanding healthcare access. We have right now, and not just in rural areas, but it affects so many people back home in Clay County, and people who I've knocked on their doors and they say, I'm having to make decisions about whether I can afford rent or whether I can afford health insurance. And that's a decision I don't think anyone should have to make. When it comes to Medicaid expansion, we're sending our state, our taxpayer dollars to other states. And I saw, I have election brain, so I can't remember, but just recently another state decided to expand Medicaid. And so other states are recognizing that there is both an economic and moral benefit, and I would like to see Missouri head down that path.
I would like to see Kansas do it too.
Yeah.
Our poor sister next door.
Oh, I know. But really, especially because there are hospitals closing in Missouri, and that I've talked to people just, you know, in the last few weeks who fall within that Medicaid donut and can't afford health insurance and are going into medical debt as a result of that decision made in Jefferson City. I think that that's a tragedy.
That was so frustrating. And I was in Jefferson City when we had the march down mm-hmm. there for the expansion. And I never could have believed it, that there would be so many, as we say, suits in line. And they were hospital administrators saying, since these funds were no longer going to be available, since they expect you to do the expansion, how it was going to affect the people that they try to serve.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, there is a broad coalition of faith leaders, community leaders, corporation, our business community. It is widely supported by really diverse groups in Missouri. And it seems like the only group opposed is the majority party who controls those decisions in Jefferson City.
What kind of wonderful gifts did we have at the end of the session this time?
Well, a lot of attention was directed to Eric Greitens and his misconduct, but while the public and the media was all focused there, the General Assembly had a very productive session, and I guess it's a matter of opinion whether or not that was a good thing. I saw endless attacks against working families, and it never ceases to amaze me how much effort the majority party puts into making it harder for people to earn a decent living in this state. So there was something called paycheck deception. I would call it paycheck deception. That was passed this year, and it basically adds bureaucratic layers that makes it more difficult to join a public services union. There was something called prevailing wage, which lowers the wage that that people would need to pay workers on public works projects. So it really is a matter of taking money out of workers' pockets and laborers' pockets.
I did hear on one of the announcements that it was people, please pay attention, that prevailing wage helps non-union workers, it helps rural workers. If ever it's a big project job, then you get the elevated wage. So why would you not want it?
Right. Well, and local communities are going to see an effect as well when there's less money in the pockets of workers and the working class, then they have less money to spend on things like going to the movies or going out to eat or paying for groceries even. And so there's an effect that's going to be seen not just in family budgets, but in community economic activity.
There's no question about it. When we've had big layoffs in the city, and we could see the difference that it made with United Way campaign funding, because it, working people are the ones that are so many times the support system.
Right. They grow our economy. Our middle class really powers our economy, and our middle class those are our job creators too. Mm-hmm. And then another thing involves right to work and
right to work for less.
Right to work for less. And when the legislature passed right to work last year, over 300,000 Missourians, one of the biggest groups ever, came together and they signed up and they said, we want to have our say on this issue. And the General Assembly didn't like that. You know, they're still trying, because of their donors and their interests, their special interests, still trying to pass something that obviously hundreds of thousands of Missourians, millions of Missourians, hopefully, will come out and say they're against. But they didn't like how it was turning out, and so, like little kids, they were losing the game, they decided to change the rules midway through, and they moved the issue from the November ballot to the August ballot, and in hopes that there will be a lower turnout, there will be a less Democratic turnout, because often Democrats are major supporters of labor, and all of that is in hopes of passing right to work for less.
One plus is they say that so many people now can't afford to go on vacation, maybe they'll be home to vote.
Well, I think there's going to be a major effort to educate voters about why right to work is wrong for the state, and I'm really proud to see how many signatures were collected during that petition process.
That's wonderful. Now, I think I heard that the corporation's got a special break.
Yeah. So, again, while there were these endless attacks against workers and working families, there was a major overhaul. Well, not a major overhaul. There were a couple of changes to our tax code system, and one was a corporate tax cut. So it changed the tax rate from 6.25% down to 4%. And then there was also an additional tax cut for personal income taxes. And often we look to Kansas as an example and a failure of what not to do. But in Missouri, gradually through giveaways to corporations and special interests and through these kinds of tax cuts year after year, we've really eaten away at our tax base and our ability to fund our state's vital services. So now we're having to make cuts to things like programs that help seniors afford in-home and community-based services. There have been cuts to prescription drugs, or programs that help seniors afford prescription drugs. And we're having to balance a budget, making decisions of whether we cut programs that affect this vulnerable group on the left or this vulnerable group on the right. And it doesn't have to be that way. We could work on a more fair tax system that benefits all Missourians.
Oh, I would hope so. I mean, we used to do very well. Not great, but we did okay.
Yeah.
But as it's just ended up to be that if a corporation wants to be counted as a person, then I say tax them like a person.
Well, all tax changes have winners and losers. And unfortunately, I've seen, billionaire and wealthy Missourians, they always seem to make out ahead of everyone else and corporations. And that's all ahead of working families.
I agree. But we didn't, we used to be a blue state. There was a time when that was the case.
Yeah.
And not anymore. What are we? Are we purple now? Or are we, I don't know
it
what
depends.
We are.
Lately, we're looking a little red.
Well, that can be turned around. Mm-hmm. It really can be. And it's really not about a color so much as it is legislative people who want to take care of the people that send them there.
Exactly.
So, and I think that there's still time if people wanted to assist either candidate. We're still waiting for Kevin. Kevin, if you're out there, ring the doorbell. But how could they help you? How they could help Kevin if they want to help Kevin?
Sure. Well, I don't know about helping Kevin. I'll let him speak to that. But people can go to arthurformissouri.com/volunteer. Or just show up at our headquarters, which is right next door to the UAW hall across from the Ford plant. And, you know, we are intent on knocking all doors in Clay County and making phone calls and making sure that our voters show up and that people of the area know our vision for the senatorial district and what we hope to accomplish. And it's really grassroots, and I'm really proud of what we've done.
That's so you still have work left to do.
Of course. Okay. This is a big weekend.
Wonderful. So I'm sure that there'll be many of our people, our listeners, who will be able to come and help or help Kevin if that's their choice.
Sure.
And
I'll say on Saturday, Jason Kander is coming to kick off our canvass at 10 a.m., and so be sure to stop by our headquarters at 10 a.m. and please come knock a packet or make some phone calls on our behalf. But we're really excited to have our special guest, Jason Kander.
Oh, that would be nice. And so I want to thank you, Lauren Arthur, candidate for this June 5th special election for state senator. And this is Hester Dusick, CWA 6360. And I want to also identify our song from It's I Want to Be Free, and that is by Red Star Singers.
Thanks.
Our listeners love to support organizations that support KKFI. To reach a diverse and active community, become a community marketing partner. Learn more at kkfi.org/marketing.
The Mid-America Regional Council Air Quality Program has issued an orange ozone alert today, which indicates high levels of ozone pollution in our air. Individuals with asthma or other breathing problems, heart conditions, and all young children and seniors should limit their outdoor activity. Please avoid unnecessary driving today and postpone mowing your lawn and refueling your vehicle to help reduce pollution. For more information, visit marc.org/airq.
KKFI 90.1 FM invites you to celebrate the kickoff of Kansas City's LGBTQIA Pride Month with your own radio theater ensemble, Shots in the Night. Original comedic and thought-provoking productions will air this Thursday, May 31st, beginning at 7 p.m. Listen with pride to KKFI 90.1 FM's Shots in the Night.
I've always hated cod liver oil, Gallo almost as much. If I'm not boycotting at least five major union-busting companies who all own each other anyway, I start to feel kind of out of touch. If we have to have NAFTA and CAFTA, we'll see our jobs in the hereafter, or some such. And then there's Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big company sells below cost, drive mom and pop out of biz. Pretty soon all over the land, one big open shop, unions banned. That's our Walmart. They tell their suppliers to buy overseas, that's even better than a wage freeze. We're one big happy family, no unions allowed, this enterprise is free. It's worker free, we're all associates now, see? I guess that means it's our Walmart. They say we buy American whenever we can. We buy at home right here in Saipan. Worst of all, every other store has to follow suit if they want to sell more. But I don't want to follow suit, see? Let's get it over with. Just shoot me. God bless Walmart. Brought 6,000 jobs back to South Carolina for a whole 6 months and sent them back to China where they worked 12 hours on Easter and Earth Day, but they let them off for their 7th birthday. But the shift don't seem so long, as long as they're singing the company's song to the Great Walmart of China. 10% of associates get the health care paid by the public, average figure for various states.
Hi, and that was Dave Lippman with his new version of I Hate Walmart. And this is Judy Ansel. In 2007, Walmart negotiated a development deal with the city of Raytown for a super center to anchor a new retail district located in a community improvement district. The community improvement district can impose additional sales tax, which is, I guess, a development scheme. And they used sales tax increment financing for the project. What all that means is that shoppers at Walmart pay additional taxes, and none of Walmart's annual sales and property taxes have ever been available to fund the city's budget. But instead, they've been redirected to bond payments and interest. Most of the TIF, that's the tax increment financing money, was used to acquire land for and build the new Walmart Supercenter. So in 2018 alone, Raytown will spend roughly $3 million on bond payments, of which an estimated $1.8 million will primarily come from taxes generated by Walmart that would otherwise have been available to fund the city's budget. TIF, or tax increment financing, is an all too common way for cities to attract investment and presumably jobs. In this case, the city of Raytown was giving a subsidy to one of the nation's most profitable and its largest corporation to fund jobs that pay less than average and which often get subsidized themselves when workers are dependent on food stamps and other welfare programs. Now there's a tiff in Raytown over the Walmart tiff because the city can't make its budget. And the reason appears to be that while Walmart pays them no taxes, the cost of providing police to the store is bankrupting them. That's the city. They've laid off police and are talking about raising taxes on residents. On April 17th, a group of residents of Raytown and Independence, some of them union activists, stood in front of the Raytown City Hall and held a press conference. To kick it off was Anahi Tapia, an organizer for Making Change at Walmart. Here's Anahi.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anahi, and I'm an organizer with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union in the Making Change at Walmart campaign. Today, we're here because today is a big day for our country. Today is tax day. Millions of people across the country are getting ready to write their checks to the government and pay their taxes. And while millions of people in the country are being responsible citizens and paying their taxes, Walmart is actually doing the entire opposite. They're ripping off taxpayers' money away. Here in Raytown, they have been offloading their security costs onto the local police department. In a 12-month period, they have made the calling 911 their first line of defense when it comes to shoplifting as little as $2. 812 calls have been made in a 12-month period. And we're here because it is unacceptable and this has to stop. In the past month, as an organizer, I've been talking to customers, residents of Raytown, Independence, and across the city about asking them one simple question. We engage over 200 people on who do they think should pay for 812 police service calls made last year to this Raytown Walmart alone. And the results were shocking. They were shocking in the sense that they overwhelmingly agree with us. 98.17% of the people we spoke with thought that Walmart should be the one responsible for this, should be the one be held accountable and not the taxpayers of Raytown. Only 1.83% said the opposite. Only, if you look at these numbers, only 4 people out of the 219 people that we spoke with and had one-on-one conversations with thought that the Raytown City should be responsible for it. The rest actually want Walmart to be held accountable. So we're here because we actually been talking to residents here from Independence, from Raytown, and they want to speak about this issue as well.
At the press conference, Lucio Perez of Cement Masons Local 518 announced the formation of a task force to hold Walmart accountable. One of its members is Katie Phelan, who lives in Raytown. Here's Katie.
Good evening. We're here tonight because we are taxpayers and citizens of Raytown. There are now 3 proposals in front of the Board of Aldermen about proposed tax increases for the residents of Raytown to pay. A proposed property tax increase, a sales tax increase, and an internet user tax. At this time, there are no proposals for making Walmart pay their fair share, and the aldermen are refusing to look at any fee system or increase on taxes to make Walmart pay their fair share for services they disproportionately use. I called last week to request that the city of Raytown protect our children by sending a patrol car for 15 minutes after school at the middle school where there have been numerous fights. I was told that in order for that to happen, you would have to call on a daily basis as needed. And yet we have all of us seen police cars sitting out in front of Walmart in Raytown for hours on end. There were 2 bomb scares and there were a lot of police and firefighters used for those bomb scares. Did Walmart have to pay? And the day I called to try to get the police to come out, there was a shooting at the school that night at a track meet. So this is an issue. I mean, they found it more important to be at Walmart than protecting our kids. And did Walmart have to pay for anything that they're getting from this city? You know, they have an abatement on their property taxes, you know, and it leaves the community members begging for services. I attended a meeting with 2 aldermen to discuss this issue, and the aldermen absolutely refused to take any proposals from us, pushed it away. They've been hostile and they've been dismissive. And tonight, we as citizens of Raytown will come together to ensure that Walmart, one of the most profitable corporations in America, pays their fair share for where they exist instead of taxing the ordinary citizens of our community. And I'm co-chairing a task force, and I've talked to my neighbors. And my neighbors, once they find out this is going on, they didn't even know these taxes were proposed. They are really upset. So I want the aldermen to reconsider this and listen. Thank you.
That was Katie Phelan, and preceding her was Anahi Tapia. Another speaker at the press conference was Randy Parras, campaign director of Making Change at Walmart. He's with the organizing department of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, and he's with us by phone from Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So last fall, it was reported that Walmart didn't have to pay about $300,000 in local taxes every year, and that Raytown was having to significantly cut their public safety budget and other city budgets because of Walmart. How bad is it in Raytown, and can you explain why this is happening?
Yeah, I think it's a severe problem because what happened, and when they were doing this deal back in 2007, there was another Walmart in town that was generating about 12% of the revenue for the city of Raytown through the sales tax. And so Walmart, of course, threatened to open a new store somewhere else. So they, you know, the leaders at that time cut this deal. It was a horrible deal for the city, for the residents of Raytown, because eventually, within, after the new store was built, the other store that was generating the 12% revenue eventually closed. And what you had left was a super center that was newer, but all the money from sales tax revenue never went to the general fund. That money was going to pay off, you know, these bonds to move a high school for some other developments that never took place. So millions of dollars were going to line the pockets of Wall Street fat cats who were getting interest on those bonds. And the kicker on this thing was that if Walmart was to close, based on this deal, if this new Walmart closes tomorrow, Raytown residents are still on the line for that money. They got to pay those bonds off. So Walmart can walk away, and Raytown have to pay it up to 100% of whatever money amount of money they're generating a year to pay on those TIFs. So it's a horrible deal.
Yeah.
And Walmart knew it going into, but they cut it anyway.
And just
one more point. And the shortfall here was that, in addition to what was going on with the police department, the reason why they're having such difficulty meeting their budgets is because Walmart, who's not generating any revenue for the fund, is now making excessive police calls. So they got to keep allocating more resources to go to Walmart, and that's what really stretched the budget.
Right. So at the time their income, their tax income went down, actually the costs of providing police service went up.
And Walmart decided to use them as a private security rather than hire their own people and own security, which they've done in other parts of the country.
We'll get to what some of those things Walmart could be doing are. But first, you also mentioned the Independence Walmart store. They got incentives too, right?
Yeah, I mean, what Walmart does, I don't know the specifics of that particular store. I mean, that caught our eye because there were so many. It's got one store that was like in the top four in the whole county area. But again, Walmart has a history of doing these types of deals, and then, you know, they try to figure out ways they can, you know, offset their security costs or do different things from local communities. And most communities don't know what's happening because they don't know how many calls are going out there. And then when you bring it to their attention, then people are shocked.
Yeah, right. So they do this all over the country?
Absolutely. It's on a national pattern, and we called them out again last year. We did some ads and places like Tampa Bay and Dallas Oklahoma City and Minneapolis, St. Paul area, where there's these, you know, just exceeding calls, just hundreds and hundreds of calls, thousands of calls, sometimes 16,000 calls over a two-year period to stores in a particular area. And Walmart, you know, is able to get away with it because, you know, they use, like you heard in the clip, Walmart, they use local police as a first line defense. When communities fight back and hold them accountable, like they did in Dallas, you know, the city, they adopt policies like a $150 limit for any item. No, they don't, the police will not respond to any item that's less than $150. Right? They're more strategic in how they allocate a police car. And Raytown is a cozy relationship between Walmart and the chief of police and the mayor, where you have cars parked out in front of Raytown almost 24/7, just hanging out.
Parked out in front of the Walmart?
What's that?
Parked out in front of the Walmart?
In front of the Walmart, yeah. Not responding to a call, just like waiting for the next thing to happen.
Well, you know...
You know, and who's paying for that? Go ahead.
One of the things that shocked me was a chart that you guys provided at the press conference about the number of police calls in Walmarts all over our metro area. And just to give some examples, Gladstone, 554 police calls between November 1st, 2016 and October 31st, 2017. Independence, two stores, 862 police calls. Kansas City, Kansas, 769 at two stores. Kansas City, Missouri, a total of five stores, 2,360 police calls. Yeah. And it goes on and on. So it appears the taxpayers all over the metro area are bearing these costs. So let me ask you
this. Go ahead.
Yeah, last September, Raytown Alderman Eric Thiemann suggested labeling the local Walmart as a public nuisance because of the high number of police calls it draws. He said cities charge other entities that use a lot of police services for those services, but evidently the council has refused and instead wants to raise taxes on Raytown residents. Katie suggested in her talk that council members are only listening to Walmart, not the citizens. Is that your view too?
Oh, absolutely. These folks are either fearful of Walmart or in bed with Walmart. They've cozied up to Walmart. because we have examples from other parts of the country where small towns have fought back and passed, you know, public ordinance, public nuisance laws against Walmart. And when they do that, Walmart responds accordingly, and the calls for service drop dramatically because they don't want to be fined for being a public nuisance. So in some towns, I mean, some places, like as little as they get allocated 3 to 4 calls a month, or some are 10 calls a month, like in Beech Grove, Indiana. And of course, you know, there's exceptions to that, to those calls. Like if it's a life-threatening situation, you know, that's different. If someone's committed murder, there's a felony in place. But we're talking for petty theft, they put a lid on it because it's just, you know, no local community can be, you know, the first line of defense for Walmart. So we know there's solutions that out there have been and tried out, and they've been proven to work. In Raytown, for whatever reason, and we think is because of what you mentioned, they're so in the pocket of Walmart, these leaders refuse to listen.
You know, one of the things you mentioned in your talk was something that shocked me. And you said that Walmart does do its own security in part. Mm-hmm. They do what's called a walk of shame. Would you explain what that is?
Yeah, this is what we found out talking to the workers at the Walmart store in Raytown. They prefer the walk of shame. And it wasn't Walmart security. It was Walmart calling the local police. And the Raytown police officers would come inside the store, and they would arrest people, like mothers with their children, and then walk them out the store for an item that was maybe $6 or $5. And these folks would be, you know, shamed in front of everybody as they were walking out with their children, sometimes just them crying as their parent was being arrested and walked out for a very small item.
I remember I once got walked out of a Walmart store, but that was on Black Friday, where we were actually handing out flyers to customers about Walmart's practices with its workers, which we really don't even have time to go into, right, on this interview. But, you know, give me some examples some more examples of some of the things that other cities have done in order to try to lower their public safety costs for Walmart.
Yeah, there's Fruit Township in Michigan. What they did, they recently fined Walmart $88,000 for some of the security costs of having to come and support them, and Walmart cut the check, as well as some other retailers. So communities, if they get practical, get smart about it, they can hold them accountable. I think it's Kokomo, Indiana. They also, you know, filed, you know, they put limits, you know, using the public nuisance, and how many calls, and they fine Walmart. And the moment they do this is what Walmart does because they're smart. They then, to get back in line, they then hire more security in the store. They then put more workers on the store so they can, you know, watch customers, and they have more surveillance. So they know the solution. They just don't want to spend the money.
Right.
So whatever they can get away with it, they'll continue to use the local police as a first line of defense.
Okay. I want to get a little more general and talk some about TIFs, okay? A Kansas City Star editorial last September, at the time all of this hit the media, said, here's what not to do if you now hold local office or aspire ever to serve the public in that capacity. Do not hand out the enticements known as tax increment financing or TIFs as if they were Halloween candy to anyone who shows up at the door in plastic fangs or a sparkly tiara. Otherwise, you could wind up like Raytown, giving away the store to get the superstore. Does your union have a policy of banning TIFs and other incentives for Walmart or in general? What's the position?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have a consistent policy on it. What we do know is that when you do these types of policies, you got to be in the public's interest, not in Walmart's interest. And what you have is because you have these small towns thinking that they're so hungry for the revenue that will be generated by the sales tax, they'll do backflips and do whatever can, you know, in terms of sometimes they even give corporations like Walmart a pass on property taxes or sales tax revenue for 3 years or 4 years or 5 years. Sometimes they'll donate the land. Sometimes they'll do things they won't do anything else because they see this large corporation that's going to employ 200 or 300 people, you know, generate, you know, have a good financial impact on their economy. But they don't really see the real cost of when you do pursue Walmart as a partner.
Yeah.
How much it really costs taxpayers, you know. And I think what's going on in Raytown, the total, it's a crime that now the costs are being pushed down to homeowners who really don't even know what's going on.
And probably some of those folks actually work at Walmart. Do you want?
And some of these councilmembers, everyone knows about this tip. Well, no, they don't. We talked to hundreds of people. They have no idea what's going on at all.
Right. And finally, let me just ask you. You know, I mean, they've created a bunch of jobs there, right? Or did they create jobs, or did they just take jobs from other stores, which subsequently shut down because Walmart took sales from those stores?
What kind of jobs are they? I'm sorry, it's kind of loud. It's starting to pour where I'm at right now. The problem is that they do. It's a low wage model for the economy. And the types of jobs they do, what's even worse is that they have high turnover, so it doesn't even provide good, stable income for people. Mm-hmm. So then you wonder why these places become magnets for crime and other things that happens at Walmart because of just how it turns their economic model. And so, you know, Target's now taking the lead. They promise $15 an hour by 2020. Other places like Starbucks and other retailers, they're starting to pay their workers more, invest in them more, and Walmart's still trying to catch up. And it's unfortunately that local economies like Raytown have to suffer. Even worse, elected officials like the ones you have in Raytown are doing Walmart's bidding.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have time for. We've been talking to Randy Parras, who is from Making Change at Walmart. Thank you so much, Randy.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll keep people posted on the progress of this campaign. And stay tuned for Washington Window on Workers.
Solidarity rocks. Solidarity rocks. Solidarity rocks. Solidarity rocks.
Hi, and this is Judy Ansel again, and now we have Mark Grunberg on with Washington Window on Workers. How are you doing, Mark?
Well, other than feeling like an air traffic controller, I'm fine. That's how much has been going on around here.
That's crazy, huh? Yeah. Well, I want to talk with you about the latest from the Trump administration, which is the three executive orders which he has issued against federal workers or taking away rights of federal workers. And the opposition already from the American Federation of Government Employees. So tell us about these executive orders.
Okay, well, first let's set the scene. When you think of federal workers, you have this stereotype, you know, people in offices, you know, shuffling papers. Wrong. It is your neighbors, it is your friends, it is your colleagues, it's your classmates, so on and so forth. There are 2 million federal workers nationwide. 85% of them are outside of Washington. A ton of them are in Kansas City,
right,
which is a major regional center. So, with that, what Trump did with his executive orders was basically try to trash a lot of those workers' rights. If the boss disciplines you for whatever reason, the boss what dreams up, you got only 30 days to appeal, not 60 days. If the boss disciplines you, you're promptly suspended without pay. If the union wants to defend you, now they got to do it on their own time and on their own dime, rather than, and it's in the law, you know, having the union shop stewards go to your boss and say, okay, you know, here's the case, so on and so forth. We're going to sit down and hash this out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Think of every single worker right that could be on the job, even if you're a non-union worker. Mm. And that's what Trump tried to trash. Now,
can he do it?
AFGE, the biggest workers union, went to court this morning to try to stop at least that shop steward one, and is still looking at the other two.
So are these things written into the law? I thought we had civil service laws that protected workers.
We do have civil service laws, but they protect people from being fired for political reasons. Trump is basically trying to get around that so that he can install his favorites. If you suddenly have firing at will, in so many words, you can install your own guys. The only one that's really written in black and white in the law is the one about the shop stewards. Everything else is rather vague, and Trump can use his executive orders, or is trying to use his executive orders, to get around that.
So there's another federal union, too, NIFE, the National Federation of Federal Employees, which is part of the International Association of Machinists. Are they going to court, too?
I've talked to the other unions. They are looking at the court case that AFGE filed today. The AFL-CIO is already on board with AFGE. So far, everybody else is just has their lawyers reviewing it.
Okay, and there's also the Treasury employees.
And they're reviewing it also.
All right. Do you have any idea about how many workers this affects?
Well, he's talking about the entire federal workforce. There are 2 million people nationwide.
Yeah.
Multiply that by their families, and you've got a lot of people who are suddenly wondering, hey, is my dad or my mom or my brother or my sister going to have a job tomorrow morning because of Trump's executive orders? So many words.
Well, I can't wait for the demos because I'm sure there's going to be a few.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, thanks very much for all
AFG
the good news.
AFG has already started the demos, yes. So.
Oh. All right. Where are they? Are they in D.C. or are they going to be around the country?
Well, they started in D.C. You're going to see them in Kansas City pretty soon, given there's a major Treasury installation in Kansas City. So,
well, it's not only Treasury, but we have a huge Social Security installation as well. So there's a lot of federal workers here. Okay. Well, thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you next month, and stay cool.
Great. Thank you.
And now for the Heartland Labor Forum calendar.
Yes, Heartland Labor Forum calendar, May 31st, 2019. ACLU, People Power, Families Belong Together Rally at U.S. Attorney's Office. It'll be Friday, June 1st. That's tomorrow at noon at the United States Attorney's Office, 500 State Avenue, Suite 360 in Kansas City, Kansas. ACLU, People Power, and a number of other organizations will be involved. Volunteer with No on Prop A committee. That'll be Saturday, June 2nd, 10 to 2 p.m. at 3600 Broadway Boulevard, Suite 111, Kansas City, Missouri, 64111. Jobs with Justice Organizing Committee will be Tuesday, June 5th, 6:30 p.m. at All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut, Kansas City, Missouri. Civil Disobedience Training hosted by Missouri Poor People's Campaign, a call for national moral revival and Stand Up KC. This will be Saturday, June 9th, 4 to 6 p.m. at the UAW Local 249 at 8040 Northeast 69 Highway. That's over there next to the Clay Como plant. 64068 is the zip code. And 2018 Great Labor Arts Exchange will be June 21st to 24th. ATU Tommy Douglas Conference Center, Silver Springs, Maryland. For more information, go to www.laborheritage.org. Check out the Heartland Labor Forum schedule on the web at www.heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can also listen to today's show. Like us on Facebook. Just search for Heartland Labor Forum. Send us your feedback about the show. What do you want to hear? What did you like or hate? Volunteer for the Heartland Labor Forum and call us at 816-235-1470.
Okay. Thanks, Hester. And that number has changed, so don't try it. and tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show is about Quindaro, a gateway to freedom, and meet the Heartland Labor Forum feature writers. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. To Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.